Welcome to another message of hope from Gateway Church Australia. For more information or to contact us, please visit gateway.asn.au. Good morning, my name is Singe. It's very good to see you here this morning. I'd like to add my encouragement to what Craig said during the MC section. Encourage you to fill out those encouragement cards, response cards, prayer and praise cards. And on your way out, you can drop those and your offerings on the buckets just on your way out the doors. Hey, we're in the middle of this great series on Mark at the moment. Well, we're not really in the middle. We're at the start of it. It's 10 weeks. It's only the second week. That's probably not really true to say we're in the middle, but we're in it anyway. And I'm really excited to be able to share with you about Mark 2. I think we've got some really cool stuff to get through this morning. And for me, when I'm studying the Bible, when we're doing something like this and we're going through a book of the Bible, what I like to do is ask the book some questions, ask the scripture some questions, because I think one of the tricky things sometimes is when you have a book that's written a really long time ago, but you have this promise that it's going to be living and active in your life right now, there's a bit of a gap where we have to do a little bit of work sometimes just to apply it to our lives. And the way I like to do that is to ask some questions. And that's exactly what we're doing with the text of Mark in this series. And the two main questions we're asking the text is, what does this tell us about what Jesus is like and who Jesus was? And what does this tell us about God's kingdom and what it's like? Because we also know that the promise is that God's kingdom is coming to earth, not in the future, but like we're in the process of it coming to earth now. So the more we can understand about what God's kingdom looks like, the more we can see that here, and we might be able to see it in our lives and might be able to draw a little closer to it. Mark is a bit of a crazy book, and we're going to see that in particular in this chapter. Mark is your friend who doesn't hold anything back and jumps from story to story constantly, assuming that you'll be able to keep up. That's who Mark is when he's writing this book. He is he's ruthless at cutting out what he saw as the boring bits. He just goes from miracle to miracle to story to story. I read this week somebody who's much more good at words than me. It's okay, that was a joke on purpose. Just anybody who's getting worried, hasn't heard me speak before, they're like, geez, this guy is struggling early. Said this: those who look for an outline in the book of Mark come away baffled. All the spliced together scenes defy structure. It's not really a great review, is it? This is a one-star review on Amazon. One author observed that Mark shows Jesus scattering miracles like rice at a wedding. Matthew and Luke each give four chapters of historical warm-up before recording even one miracle by Jesus. Mark covers three miracles and a group event in the first chapter. So this is the book that we're dealing with, and that is also why, as we watch a dramatized version of Mark 2 in just a second, that is also why we're just going to be focusing in on one story. So we're going to see all of Mark 2, which has a few stories in it, but the one that we're going to be talking about mainly this morning, if you listen up to, is where Jesus calls Levi. You'll see a guy sitting in a booth taking money from people, carrying on business, and Jesus calls him. That's what we're going to be talking about this morning. But in the meantime, let's have a look at Mark 2. So we're getting a bit of a sense of the manic pace of this book now, just story after story. So let's continue along on our theme of asking this text some questions, because I've got some questions about this text. Where's the owner of the house, and why isn't he more angry that there's a hole in the roof now? Good questions to ask. We could ask questions of this, like, is Jesus really talking about wine? Because I get the sense that maybe he's not actually talking about wine. We could ask questions like, when was the wedding? I don't understand. What's all this bridegroom stuff? And the interesting thing is, as we ask these questions, we can find some interesting answers. like that even the Pharisees suspended their rules about fasting during the week of a wedding. We see we can find these things. So let's ask some questions of this particular section of Mark. So this would be my first question. What is Jesus' problem in this chapter? Seriously, what is his problem? He's just going around trying to annoy the Pharisees. He's basically picking people. He's going, I'm going to make you angry. And I know exactly how I'm going to do it. And let me tell you, I think this is interesting because Rick asked us the question last week, what would happen if Jesus walked into this church? And I wonder, like, what would happen if this Jesus was running this church? Because I happen to think that probably there would be some sort of board of people who would get around Jesus and say, now listen, we understand what you're trying to do. We understand the point that you're trying to make. But in the current climate, it's not really acceptable to be treating the other religious leaders in this particular way. And we don't think it reflects very well on this church. That is pretty much what we would say to someone who led like he does in this chapter. So what is his problem and why is he like this? Why are you like this? Well, look, here's the thing. He's not shying away from controversy. In fact, it kind of looks like he's enjoying it. I kind of imagine Jesus with like a little bit of a smirk on his face as he's responding to the Pharisees in all of these times, to be honest. But I think the answer to this question is he's trying to demonstrate a new normal, because Jesus didn't come to fit in with what the world was doing. Although he tries to speak and teach in a way that people can understand, he's not here to. He wasn't here to confirm what the way people were already living. He was here to change it and to demonstrate a new normal. I actually think Craig mentioned the moon landing, and I was actually thinking about it this week. I think maybe if you were a person living in Jesus' time, it would have felt a little bit like an alien had landed in your society when you talked to Jesus. Because you would say, well, this is how we think about money. And he would say, oh, you still think about money like that? No, we've got a way better way of doing that. Or he'd land now and we'd say, oh, he would say, oh, you still put fuel in your cars to move your cars around? Oh, that's crazy talk. That's not how we do things anymore. He was like this alien person who landed and said, no, oh, you guys, you're living in the past. We've got a way better way of doing all of this stuff. And interestingly, even if we skip around a little bit, even in the fact that Jesus called Levi to be his disciple and called all of his disciples to be his disciples, did you know that that's backwards for society? I think if we stop and think about it for a second, it makes sense, doesn't it? Why would the teacher be collecting disciples? What's supposed to happen is that there's an amazing teacher and people come to him and say, can I be your disciple? But Jesus doesn't do it that way around. He calls people to follow him. So what is Jesus' problem? He's got a lot of problems. That's the answer. He's not really happy with how the world is working, and we know he's here to change it. So that's the answer to that question, I guess. Next question, maybe. Who is Levi? Why is he so important? I mean, we get that he ended up being a disciple, but why Levi? So who is Levi? He's the son of Alphaeus. Three little words that are in there. I happen to think that a lot of little things that are in there that seem inconsequential are actually in the scriptures for a reason. And son of Alphaeus tells us a lot, because this is how ancient people recorded family lineages. It's how you told someone who you belonged to. And so son of Alphaeus gives us a bit of background on who Levi is. Not super precise background, as it turns out, because his mum, the wife of Alphaeus, you might say, her name was Mary. And one of the issues I found as I was doing some more research on this, when it comes to people whose name is Mary in the Bible, is that there were a lot of people called Mary. Like a lot. Like, there's entire articles you can read about the Marys of the Bible, because it's all a little bit mixed up of which Mary is which Mary. There's so many Marys going on. They've got Marys coming out of our ears. Mary, Mary, Mary. I think there's a band called that, wasn't there? The important thing here is son of Alphaeus. He's mixed up with these Marys. the Marys that he's in the realm of that we can't quite get a handle of in the research that maybe someone smarter than me can figure it out, but I couldn't figure it out. The point is, the Marys that we're talking about are three Marys who have been around from when Jesus was born, and we see that they're gradually traveling. We see them mentioned every now and then alongside Jesus, and they're the three Marys who are there tending to his tomb near the end of Jesus' story, and near the end being very key about that particular moment in time. But there's a bunch of Marys, and ultimately what we're saying here is Levi is involved with all of these Marys. There's conjecture he's possibly James's brother, maybe that's the same Mary, maybe it's different Marys. It's very confusing. Here's what I want you to take away from it, blah, 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 blah. He's in the family. He's in the loop of people who know who Jesus is from very early on. This isn't the story of Jesus walking down the road and going, you look like you'll do. Why don't you come follow me? That's not what this story is about. The story is about someone who knew who Jesus was and had been in this circle of people right from the very start. So why does it mention his job? Why do we need to know that he was a tax collector? Why doesn't it just say that he was at work and Jesus called him? Well, being a tax collector was not a particularly good... Well, depends on how you look at it. It was a good job, but it was a bad job. Basically, being a tax collector was taking this road. I'm going to be rich and completely cut off from my family and heritage. That was basically what choosing to be a tax collector was. It essentially disgraced your entire family. If you became a tax collector, everybody's like, we hate you now. That's the summary of becoming a tax collector, but you would be rich. So I looked up some more information about tax collectors and why this is such a looked down upon kind of job. Well, firstly, this is the way that tax collectors work. They didn't get a wage from the Roman government. They actually sort of predicted how much tax they thought they were going to collect. And there were different types of tax collectors, so it depended on what it was. But they predicted. They paid it in advance to the Roman Empire. And then they marked it up and collected it from people and kept the money for themselves. So essentially, the amount of money that you made as a tax collector directly correlated with how dishonest or how far you were willing to rort people for money. That's pretty much what being a tax collector was. Most people in the Roman Empire didn't like tax collectors, even the Romans. I don't think that's really a surprise, but particularly Jewish culture saw them as traitors because they were working for the Roman Empire. Some more info here for assessment purposes. Tax collectors, they were allowed to search everything except the person of a Roman lady. Any property that you hadn't declared, they would just take that because you hadn't written on the form. Ancient documents reveal that there are occasions where there would be a bad harvest in a town. They didn't have much to give. They would hear that a tax collector was going to come and visit their town. Entire villages would just move rather than face a tax collector. They'd just go start a new village somewhere else because seeing a tax collector was too bad. Who here feels like that at tax time sometimes? Just moving, starting. Anyway, what was Levi's actual job? Some people think that he might have been a customs officer kind of person. So he's sitting on a trade route, essentially, and everything that comes through gets taxed by him. A particularly despised type of tax collector, because they were the ones who were driving up the costs of goods. Because every town that goods went through, they got taxed. And so it was just multiplying, multiplying, multiplying how much everything costed. So nobody's really a fan of them. Alternatively, he's actually just a guy who sits around in his own town and taxes his mate down the road and gives the money to Herod Antipas, who's running the area. Also, not a real good look around your friends when you're being invaded by the Romans and then your friend just starts collecting money and giving it to them. So he's not a super loved person. And I think that that's important to this story as well, because we have this weird link of things that he's got this family link back to Jesus really early, but that he's probably got some level of separation from his family because of his job. But he almost certainly knows who Jesus is from his family. And so the next obvious question, we know who Levi is, we know why we care about his job, but why did he follow? Why did he get up and just take off? I mean, in the video we just watched, he left a table covered in cash and just walked away to follow Jesus. That's not recorded specifically in Mark, but in John it specifically says that Levi got up and left everything to follow Jesus. So there's a few fill-ins on your outline there. The first one is, as we've already established, he probably knew who Jesus was. When Jesus came, Jesus wasn't picking a random person, and he didn't see Jesus and go, well, who are you? They kind of knew who each other were. And I think that that's important. I think, and this is just to be 100% clear so that nobody can accuse me of anything, this is just what I think. I think that he was probably hoping for a call. He's been separated from his family, but he's heard about this person. He's heard who they believe he is. He's heard that he's around. I think maybe on some level he's hoping that Jesus might be able to change his situation. Maybe. And I think inside of that, your third feeling there is, I think he was ready for a call. And the reason I think that is because he got up and left everything. He didn't say, I just need a week to think about it and then I'll figure out whether I'm going to get on a plane and go with Jesus. He got up and left everything. I think he wasn't just hoping, but he was ready. I think he didn't think it was likely. I'm not sure that he really thought it was going to happen, but he was prepared. He was prepared in his heart for what he was willing to let go. But then that raises another interesting question. If that is true, then why hadn't Levi already just left to follow Jesus? There were a bunch of people following him around. We already knew that. He had plenty of opportunity. Jesus had already given up on houses in Capernaum. He decided that maybe demolishing an entire city on his way through wasn't a good idea, and maybe one ruined roof was a good enough reason to go and teach next to the lake instead of in houses. And so we also read that in this little, again, Mark, rapid book, one little sentence, Jesus went away again to teach by the lakeside, and a multitude followed him. Multitude, really interesting word. We probably picture when Jesus is teaching some people sitting on a hillside. It's grassy. Maybe there's some cheese and bickies going around. Probably a lamb in the corner somewhere for some reason. That's probably what we picture. But the truth of this word is they talk about it being a throng of people, of it being... It kind of goes to being a borderline riot. Imagine thousands of people standing around trying to listen to one guy who does not have a microphone and thinking that's the most important person they can listen to. Do you think they're just sitting around on a hill 100 meters away trying to listen to him? This is not some nice, neat meeting where they filed into rows and listened to what Jesus had to say. There's a lot more to what's going on here. And the point of that is that if Levi had wanted to go hear Jesus, he could have been completely incognito. He could have just been in the middle of this crowd, totally unnoticed. But he wasn't there. He was sitting in his tax collector's booth. Maybe he didn't think he was good enough. I think there's probably some people in this room who feel that way. Maybe he wasn't really sure if Jesus was quite for him yet. Maybe he'd readied his heart, but he hadn't actually made that decision to go like, no, I'm going to do the Jesus thing. And I think there's probably some people in this room who are like that. You know, last week, Rick asked us to consider what would happen if Jesus turned up in this church. And I guess I have a question for you from this, for where we are, is what would you do if you were at work and Jesus called you? That's awkward. Just 1 second. It's Jesus. Just give me 1 second. Yes. Hello. Yep, I'm good. Just a little busy at the moment, though. There's a lot of people here. No, I know it's going to be awesome, but I just don't know if I can come right now. Because I'm just in the middle of... Look, you go. I'll catch up. Is that... Okay. Yeah, great. Talk to you later. Bye. What would you do if you were just going through your Monday to Friday and Jesus called? And your next fill in there is you have to expect the unexpected call. Because I think it's rare that it comes exactly when you expect it. I think when Levi is sitting in the tax collector's booth and he sees Jesus there, he goes, I was hoping. I mean, I didn't really think he would come, but all of a sudden he's turned up at my workplace at an inconvenient time. I've got a table covered in cash, but I'm ready. I'm going to go. Levi got up and followed him. It says in more original kind of language, Levi arose and followed him. Mark cleverly here uses a word with a double meaning to add some depth to what he's saying. Because the original word for arose there does literally mean from sitting. But I don't actually think it's an accident that it also means to rise from disease and to rise from obscurity and to arise even from death is the same word. And the word is used for those reasons in other places in the Bible. I think this word is chosen very specifically that this is not just about Mark standing up and following Jesus, but this is more about what's happening in Mark's spirit as he chooses to follow Jesus. But since Jesus courted controversy, I thought maybe I'd give it a go this morning as well, see how it went. I'd contend that for plenty of people in this room, not all, but for plenty of people in the room, we limit our call. I think there's some of us who have had a call on our lives or have heard the general call that Jesus has, which is when you follow me, I have a task for you. But I think that we limit it just like I did on the phone then, maybe for a good reason. It would be a bit weird if I just dropped the mic and walked out like, catch you later, suckers. That would be a bit weird. But Levi had plenty of earthly reasons to stay right where he was as well. He could have said, Jesus, you go. I'll catch up when I've got a little bit more money saved up. We could say, Jesus, you go. I'll catch up when I'm a little less busy. Jesus, you go. I'll catch up when I've got some more time. When the kids are a little bit older, I can catch up with you. Jesus, you go. I'll catch up with you when I've got my life a little bit more together. When I'm in a better headspace, then I can catch up with you. Hey, Jesus, you go. I'll catch up with you when I've finished uni or school or year 12. Jesus, you go. I'll catch up with you when I'm a little bit older. Jesus, you go. I'll catch up with you when I'm more experienced in faith, which is dumb, but is what some of us think to ourselves. Jesus, you go. I'll catch up with you when I know for sure that it will be okay that I've decided to follow you. So your next fill in there is this. Don't chase contentment if it contains your call. Don't chase contentment if it contains your call. There is nothing wrong with working and using what God has already given you to make life a little bit more comfortable. But I believe there is something wrong with chasing contentment if it stops you from doing what Jesus has called you to do, if it stops you from hearing what Jesus wants you to do in his life. And this is the interesting thing in this passage as we move on, is that Levi gets this. He gets how amazing it is to be called and choosing to follow that. And so to make a point, he doesn't just get up and leave everything. He throws a party to celebrate that he's leaving everything. He says, yes, I'm out of here. I'm leaving all of this behind. I'm choosing nothing. I'm choosing walking through fields, picking grain heads just to eat during the week. I'm done with this cushy, easy job that makes me stacks of money. I'm leaving my Lexus. I'm relinquishing my riches. I'm abandoning my apartment, and I'm pumped about it. That is Levi's position on call. And I don't think that there's really a valid explanation for this, apart from supernatural joy and supernatural understanding of the call. In John 15, it says this, "I've told you these things so that you will be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. This is my commandment. Love each other in the same way that I've loved you. There's no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." There is joy in laying down your life for your friends. There is joy in laying down your life for Jesus. And yet, all of this feels not quite right, doesn't it? I know there's probably people in this room who just want to stick up their hand and go, "Yeah, but Singe, no, you're right, but like you don't get my situation. Yeah, Singe, you're totally right, but you know financial planning is very important, and it is, as long as it doesn't contain your call from Jesus. Nothing wrong with being prudent with your money." Maybe some people who go away after church and go, "Well, that's a lovely idea, but here's 12 reasons why it doesn't apply to my life." And there were people who didn't like Jesus' teachings back then as well. That's fine. They were called Pharisees. I'm not trying to say that anybody here is called a Pharisee. Or am I? I'm not. You see, interesting about Pharisees is, maybe I am, Pharisees, interesting about Pharisees, this word literally means separated ones. It means ones who have separated themselves from normal life. Like they're the ones who understand everything that is holy and they'll take no part in anything that is unholy. I won't be a part of that. And they believe that they are the ones who are living righteously. They're the ones who are doing everything right and that they deserve all the good in the world. And interestingly, in this passage, they don't tend to pop up when Jesus is preaching. They don't tend to confront him when there's a bunch of people around. They pop up when they think there's a little crevice in Jesus' teaching. And more importantly, they pop up when they think there's a little crevice in the belief or understanding of someone who's following Jesus. And they slink around in the shadows, waiting for a moment to pop up and ask questions and whisper snarky little comments about Jesus' teachings to the people who are listening to them. I don't think the problem these days so much is with people that we could call Pharisees. I think we mainly have that problem in our own head a little bit. I have got this under control. I can provide for my family. I love Jesus, but I can decide how Jesus is going to work through my life. I can contain that. I've got bad news. Jesus didn't spend time, he didn't invest in the Pharisees, in people who didn't want or thought they didn't need help. I think he just knew better than to waste his time with them. And we get to this hospital analogy. Jesus says, "I didn't come to help people who are healthy. I came to help the people who are sick." And again, we get to one of these clever double uses of a word. Because this word for sick denotes two things: physical illness and moral illness. It denotes both of those things. And again, I think that's on purpose. And it's interesting because we're good at reading these things and seeing them as analogies, but actually this isn't even that good of an analogy. If you read this with the understanding of the language, it tells you exactly what he means, because it means moral illness as well as physical illness. So we're not actually that clever for figuring out ourselves. It turns out it's in the text the whole time. Interesting side fact. Jesus called those who he knew needed a doctor. He called those who had an inkling there was more to life than where they were right now. He called Levi, who had everything and still not enough. And he calls you and I, no matter what we do or don't have, in material goods, in character strengths, in our moral record, in how we feel about ourselves, whether we follow Jesus for 50 years or we're going to walk out deciding that we followed him for the first time. If you want to be called, if you want to be helped by Jesus, he says that the promise is there. Maybe not immediately. Maybe you might be like Levi, waiting a little while, hoping a little while, readying yourself so that when the time comes, you can say yes. I think that as we continue to read through Mark and ask questions like, what is Jesus like and what does God's kingdom on earth look like, whether it's for the first time or for the millionth time, we're going to keep seeing this one key fact. That Jesus and God's kingdom don't look how we expect them to. And Jesus and God's kingdom didn't look how the Pharisees expected it to either. Because the kingdom looks like a pub sometimes. In fact, some historians would argue that Mark supplemented his income by actually being a publican as well. So the kingdom looks like a pub full of, not Mark, Levi supplemented his income. The kingdom looks like a pub full of corrupt cops and politicians, prostitutes, bikies, and worse, with Jesus right at the center, speaking value and encouragement and love, and calling them to be more than they are right now, calling them to be how he sees them, calling them to join him on the ultimate adventure in life, however that might look. And you know what? I've got news for you. We might not be in a pub, but we're sitting in that place right now. You're sitting with some people around you who are broken and hurting and trying to hear from Jesus and trying to figure out if he's got some call for them. In fact, you're listening to one of those people. Because that's where we're sitting. And more than that, it's where we sit during the week as well. It's where we sit on our Mondays to Fridays in our workplace. And I don't know if we always see the opportunity or sense the call that Jesus has. What if Jesus' call started off simple? And when he rang you and you answered the phone and you had readied yourself and you said, yes, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to go and encourage your coworker who looks a little bit down in the cubicle three down from you. Would you get up and do it? Who do you avoid at work? Who do you avoid in the foyer on a Sunday morning because they look like someone you don't really want to talk to? Or are you always stay in your little safe circle of people? Or do you look outside of that and look for the potential in people that maybe others overlook? Only you and Jesus know the real truth of your heart. Who you really are, where your priorities lay, and what you value the most. Are you willing to leave some of those things behind? Are you willing to ready your heart now for what might happen? I'm not saying you have to leave that stuff right now. I'm not saying you have to leave your money or leave your job or leave your house right now. It's up to Jesus to call you, not me. But I think that my job this morning is to ask you the question, well, are you willing though? Are you ready for when that call comes? Will you be like Levi who says, yes, I'm going, let's do this. And you know what? I'm pumped about it. Let's throw a party because I'm leaving everything behind. Because I think that that is the first thing that Jesus says to us. When he asks us to check our hearts, he says, come join me on an adventure. And he's looking for people who respond to come join me on an adventure who look like this. This is what you should look like when he calls you. And it's interesting, Tolkien introduces the story of the Hobbit like this. This is the story of how a Baggins had an adventure and found himself doing and saying things altogether unexpected. And I think that that is what Jesus has in store for all of us if we're willing to ready ourselves and be ready to hear that call. And so that's my prayer for us as a room, whether it's to go to Kenya or somewhere else or whether it's to walk through three cubicles down at work. My prayer is that today, the story of Levi, as told by Mark, is the new start of a story about how a Gatorite had an adventure and found himself doing and saying things altogether unexpected because of Jesus' call in their life. Hey God, we just love you so much. We just thank you so much for the incredible richness of the teachings that you've left behind that we have access to at any time. God, we thank you that you do call us and ready us no matter where we've been. And God, I just thank you that you are calling people even now. And God, I'm believing that in the rest of this service, in this coming week, that people who have been waiting for a call, who are ready for a call, they're going to hear it. God, I'm believing that people are going to be able to ready their hearts in a way that they haven't been before, and they're going to be able to be ready to say yes and throw a party when you call them. And God, even for people who are struggling to figure out whether this is all true or struggling to hear from you for the first time, I'm believing in this story, as we learn to ready our hearts and be ready to say yes and follow you, that you're going to be speaking to us in a new and a fresh way, and maybe for the first time. Because God, I believe that you are someone who wants to speak to us and wants to call us, and that you're just waiting for us to be ready to say yes. So God, let us be ready to say yes. In your name, amen.